Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Dozier. Thanks for joining us this week. On today's podcast, we'll hear from Jay Berry, founder and owner of Ignite Racing Fuel based in Marion, Indiana. Jay's also a Hoosier farmer with hundreds of acres of hemp fiber planted this past growing season. We'll talk to Jay about what he's learned over the summer and what information he can pass on for the 2020 hemp growing season. We'll also have some legislative updates from Midwest Hemp Council President and Vice President of Bose Public Affairs Group of Council at Bose, McKinney & Evans, Justin Swanson. But first, let's start with Jay Berry. Jay, an interesting, if not crazy, year for hemp in 2019, but hey, you survived it.
It has been a wild, crazy ride these last 4 to 6 months. You're exactly right. It's the industry is growing. A lot of things are happening. A lot of people are pivoting in the way that they're in the road that they're going down in regards to harvesting and where to go with their CBD or fiber.
Well, when we did speak last, I don't know exactly when that was, somewhere around April or May, obviously the end of spring there, kind of getting into summer, everybody was getting their seeds in the ground, and then the skies opened up. We had a very wet spring, and that was the start of a long summer for a lot of hemp farmers. How did that affect your growing and what you guys were doing with your operation?
It actually didn't affect us too much. I think our yield was down a little bit. We didn't end up planting our hemp until June 12th. And then we ended up harvesting it right around September 9th or 10th in that area.
Oh, okay. Did you meet your expectations?
No, I was a little bit down versus what I was hoping. But after having several people come out and meet with us and see our farm and the field, I guess what I was kind of embarrassed by looked pretty good. So I was excited, to hear that. And actually I got to go out through the summer and visit and see some other growers and kind of was able to benchmark how mine looked versus others. And so I ended up, pretty lucky. I think I had probably one of the top fields in the Midwest as far as fiber is concerned.
Oh, wow. And why do you think that is, Jay? What were you doing that maybe others weren't doing, or was it just luck, or what happened there?
A little bit of luck. I think we really paid a lot of attention to getting the soil ready. We had zero weed pressure with what we did. I spread 70 pounds of seed per the acre, and we literally had no weeds in our field. A lot of the fields I went to had a lot of weeds. It wasn't very clean. I would say majority of my field was 8 to 10 feet tall. Mm-hmm. So if we had been able to get it out a month earlier, it would have probably been another 2 to 3 feet taller. Mm-hmm. So, and then the other thing is after we planted, it was nonstop rain. And then we went through a drought to where my hemp actually went 7 to 8 weeks without rain.
And no irrigation, nothing like that.
Yeah, no irrigation, nothing like that. And it did very well. I was kind of shocked. So, we end up averaging about 2.5 ton to the acre. I think it would have been a lot better than that. I'd made probably a couple too many passes through the field. So anywhere where there was compaction or you ran over it, didn't grow as tall. Mm-hmm. So this year I'll have the machinery. I'll be ready to do it this year and it'll be a lot more level as far as the height. And I've got a different game plan when it comes to planting, packing and harvesting and everything.
And were you growing for CBD or fiber?
I was growing for fiber is what I was growing for. And then I bought, there's only two hemp cutters in North America. I bought one of them and that was a absolute lifesaver. We were able to cut anywhere from 5 to 8 acres an hour with it.
And with that, is that something you said there's only two in the country?
Yes, there's only two of them in the United States, correct.
And is this something that you were offering to other farmers for a fee or anything like that, or enough time to do something like that?
We didn't have enough time. The day I got it, we started cutting because we were getting towards the end of the time that I needed to be cutting anyways. So I had some people call me, and I've got to do some, we literally pulled it off the trailer, stuck it in the field. Everything is in German. There are no directions. Nobody knew what to do.
We're seeing a lot of that.
We didn't know what to do. it was a fingers crossed. I hope it works, and it worked. The first day and a half, perfect. The thing ran great. Then the gremlins, like we put it away, and the gremlins came out.
Right.
And then it took us like 4 days to finish. But that was just due to the we didn't have time to really go through and look at everything. I got to make some modifications. I got to put some new cutters on it. I shouldn't have the – we won't have the issues next year because we'll do a lot of it'll be ready to go next year.
All right, Jay, let's dig down here a little bit. When you said you planted 70 pounds of seed per acre, what were you finding that other farmers were planting?
A lot of were planting anywhere from 30 to 50.
And so you would certainly suggest planting more.
Yeah, I suggest going a little bit heavier. 70 may have been too much. I'm going to back it down to 60 this upcoming year.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've got roughly 78,000 seed per pound.
Mm-hmm.
Or, sorry, not 78, 28,000 seeds per pound, my bad. In what you were spreading. So the thickness, you know, once it got canopied, man, nothing was going to touch it. There was no grass, no weeds.
I see.
We spread it with the fertilizer, and then we made a pass packing it, and I got nervous, and I packed it a second time.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably shouldn't have done that. I think if I would have packed it just once the first time, we would have been fine.
And you said your results were about 8 to 10 foot stalks. Could have possibly had more if you maybe had adjusted some things.
Out in the middle where we didn't like double track over stuff, and I didn't do it twice. It was 12 feet tall, probably closer to 10 to 12 feet tall.
And tell us the difference between the fiber plants versus the CBD plants. Would you have had the same results with CBD, or is that something you plan to stay away from?
I've got zero interest in growing CBD. I think there's just too many variables out there right now.
Mm-hmm.
There's way too many guys are in over their head trying to do that. The market went from like literally 28,000 acres of CBD to over 300,000 acres of CBD. And majority of the people that have processed it right now is just sitting there because there's no home for it.
And you had no problem getting rid of the fiber.
That is an issue. The company that I was growing for went bankrupt.
Ah, we've seen that. Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I kind of, you know, I went in knowing that they were financially unstable.
Right.
And I wanted to be able to have an opportunity to grow it and be able to experiment with it. So I've got a secondary option for next year, for the fiber. And I plan on growing probably 850 to 950 acres of fiber next year.
Along with this, then obviously you learned a lot, but you made a key statement there that you were, I don't know if the word was experimenting. A lot of farmers were betting the farm on hemp, or they're thinking about betting the farm on hemp. And I've heard you say many times, that's not a good suggestion.
No, it's not a good suggestion. Even though I averaged 2.5 ton to the acre, time you factored in cutting, baling, shipping. If the company had not went bankrupt, I would have probably lost close to $150 an acre.
Hmm. If they had not gone bankrupt.
If they had not gone bankrupt.
Okay.
So, you know, that is them paying me everything. I still would have lost money this year growing like I did.
I see what you're saying.
I ended up keeping my fiber. I've got it for there'll be another alternative coming about next year that'll be processing fiber. So that is what I'm keeping my fiber for, is to be able to use it for test runs to get the machinery tuned and in line with what needs to happen to make high quality product.
So unlike corn, soybeans, other row crops, hemp can be stored for a year?
It can be stored for literally 10 to 15 years. When we baled it, it was 8.5% moisture.
Mm-hmm.
We would actually prefer to have it more like 12 to 13%, but it was just kind of the timing. I had a lot of people coming over here, checking out our field, wanting to see what it looked like, especially after we harvested with the hemp harvester.
Mm-hmm.
And then also I went to, you know, if you want to be the best, go meet them. I spent some time in Holland with Dunn Agro, with Albert Dunn. He's the guy that a lot of people have looked at his videos, the cloth machine, cutting the tops off, then cutting the fiber below. And I spent 4 days out there with Albert, and then he came here and spent 4 days with me.
Okay, and a lot of information
shared.
That
was really, really helpful in having the guy who has been doing this since the 1980s.
Sure.
Of being able to pick his brain and go through and walk through what I'm doing versus what he's doing, comparing notes, going over data. So, you know, it's been something that has been an amazing opportunity to be able to learn from the best. And so me and him have been talking, you know, we talk quite a bit going over stuff.
Mm-hmm. And then how many acres do you plan on planting next year?
I plan on planting for myself right around probably between 800 and 900 acres of fiber next year.
And again, compared to this year, you had how many acres?
This year I had 100 acres.
Okay. So obviously you felt it was worth expanding tremendously next year to make this happen, even though you still have the product from this year sitting there. I guess that's just like money in the bank, though.
Yes, yes, it is money in the bank. Will be used to fine tune the new machinery and stuff coming in for fiber.
Mm-hmm.
So, yep, it's it'll still go to good use and everything. And I'm excited about it. I think the future for hemp is bright, but everybody's got to stay cautious. I still have people call me left and right saying, hey, we're going to grow CBD, we're going to grow fiber. Just how it was last spring, that's all good and dandy, but where are you going to go with it? Who's going to process it? You know, a lot of people, you know, a lot of people took one on the chin this year, but there's a lot of new people that are jumping in that have heard that how great it is that don't realize that, hey, a lot of people literally lost the farm on it. So I, you know, it's like I tell people, start out small. If you're wanting to grow CBD, start with a couple of acres. Don't grow, you know, some people came out growing 30 to 100 acres. Don't do that. You know, this is very time consuming. It's very labor intensive. And there is oversaturation in the market. I mean, if we went from 28,000 to 300,000 acres of CBD, you can only imagine what the number will be next year.
And Jay, what would you say was your biggest obstacle this year?
I would say really learning how to grow the hemp and harvesting it. It was a major pain in the butt. I've never made so many trips through a field in 1 year as I did this year. So it is not easy. It is difficult. I've learned a lot. I know what I'll do different next year, and that'll be able to save me a lot of time and effort. Where this year, I kind of didn't know what I was doing, and I didn't have the right machinery.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the bigger key, is you need to have the right tools if you're going to do it right. So I'm investing in the proper equipment to be able to do that. I mean, one of the big things is after we spread it last year, I didn't have a big enough call packer. The call packer that I had was 12 feet wide.
Mm-hmm.
And so it took literally all day. So I just bought 2 30-foot call packers. So I'll have that. So that'll save me a lot of time. Plus that'll save a lot of compaction.
Sure.
On going over the hemp. But I know not to do it twice, just do it once now.
Lessons learned.
Lessons learned. And then when I harvested it, we cut it. Then we went to let it ret. I had an inverter to flip it, and it wasn't the right thing. And it literally took us 10 days to flip 100 acres.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it just kept binding and getting caught, catching on fire.
Oh.
So we ended up using a rotary rake to go ahead, and I'm looking at buying a specific inverter that would invert 2 rows at a time that would flip it. So I'll have that piece of equipment, and then I'm looking at buying a couple more hemp cutters from over in Europe to be able to bring over also.
So again, obviously a person that is investing even more in the hemp industry to make this work in Indiana.
Correct. I'll probably have, just in the harvesting equipment, I'm probably going to have over $1 million into that.
And then with that, is there any way you can give us some type of overview of what type of equipment you'll get for that million?
What I'll be buying is a couple more hemp cutters to be able to cut the fiber. And then also I'll be buying some inverters to help flip the hemp a little bit more uniform and a little bit faster during harvest. And then we'll also be purchasing a silage cutter, a chopper, that will be able to cut the hemp and process it to take it to the to the fiber plant. So that's what we'll be investing in.
And Jay, what about the farmers out there that don't have $1 million to invest in equipment like that to make life a lot easier? What kind of obstacles are they going to see? And where, you know, what size would you suggest for them to be planting?
I would probably suggest not doing anything under 100 to 200 acres of fiber.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the CBD, like, so I think you should be in that 2 to 5 acre range if you're going to try it. Nothing over that. And 2 to 5 acres of CBD is a lot of work in itself. So with the on the fiber side of things, like I said, there's a lot of things that purchasers are looking for. It needs to be retted properly. So the color, the texture of the fiber when you flip it needs to be right. If you cut it with a sickle bar, you have some issues because you lay it flat on the ground and then it collects, you know, dirt. It'll rain, dirt will collect on it. You go to flip it, you're mm-hmm. cutting it off ground level. You get a lot of contamination in your fiber when you do that, when you flip it and do that over and over again. Then when you go to process it, you got dirt and rocks in your hemp fiber, and you don't want that. So with the hemp cutters, it actually takes a corn silage head, chops it, and it cuts it about 4 to 6 inches off the ground.
Okay.
So then it lays it into a windrow below it, and then that way it's easier when you're letting it rep and you go to let it flip. When you go to flip it, it sits up on top of that. It's not getting pushed down flat on the ground.
I see.
So that way you're keeping it off the ground. You get better airflow coming through it, but also when it rains, you want it to rain go through it and hit the ground. You don't want it sitting in the water. So that does a couple of things.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third reason is when you go to bale it, it makes it a little bit easier because it's sitting up on top. So when you're baling, you don't have to get it down as low, the baler. You can run it a little bit higher, not collect, you know, all the garbage that's in the ground.
So many fine details with hemp farming.
It is. And like I said, we're not, you know, I haven't perfected it. I got a pretty good idea. And being able to go out and visit Albert and watch how he harvested and what they were doing. And it's like, hey, this is what we need to do. And that's the path that I was going down. And I've been able to build a really good relationship with Albert. So that's what I'm looking at. That's what I've been telling and teaching people about here. And the other thing is, honestly, I think a lot of people need to kind of hold off on growing, give it a year or two, see what happens, what develops. You know, I ask people, you know, hey, you want to grow hemp fiber? Yeah, we're going to go with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody can tell you. There is currently no hemp fiber processing facilities in the United States. It's not that easy to be able to put up a facility. So, and this stuff just became legal a year ago. So there's a lot of people kicking the tires, trying to figure out what to do with it. But, you know, give it some time. I think the biggest thing we can do as a farm community is just jump in. And we want this to be successful. We want the hemp world to be a success. But there's a lot of bad characters out there. I had an individual call me last week who is an attorney that is growing, that just purchased 80 acres of farm ground and was going to grow CBD on it, who has never farmed. And someone had already signed him a contract to pay by clones and how many clones per acre. And he's running irrigation in it to irrigate it. And I said, where are you going to go with it? Like, how many times are you going to walk it? What are you going to? He had no idea. He hadn't thought about the back end of the process.
That's amazing.
So the thing that the farmers got to be cautious about is the people out there pushing this, because the people that are making all the money are the clone guys on the CBD side. You know, a lot of people, you know, a lot of acres that got planted fiber and CBD did not get harvested this year.
What is your remedy to that? What would you suggest to folks like this attorney who's not a farmer who jumps in thinking, well, all it takes is some money and I will have a crop and I'll sell that crop and I will make a profit?
Yeah, he was thinking he was going to be making $15,000 to $20,000 an acre is the number that he told me. And that's what he was told. And I said, well, you're an attorney, read the fine print.
But is there even any fine print in the hemp industry? That's the thing. As you said, it's only a year old.
I don't know.
So.
You know, honestly, I don't know. It's like I tell everybody, be extremely cautious. There is a lot of positive things going to be coming about within the next year or two. But we kind of need to let them kind of play out. I feel like if there's going to be some processors that do pop up, that they'll be contacting individuals to grow versus, you know, everybody wanting to jump in and grow just a little bit. On the fiber side, you've got to make it enough volume to make it worthwhile. Because like I said, the machinery to come in, you know, a 5 to 10 acre patch, it's not enough worth messing with on the fiber side.
So, and of course, this is why we encourage folks to get involved in some of the associations, meet other people, talk to people, go to the educational events like the Midwest Hemp Council. I know, Jay, you're a member of it. How open are you? How accessible are you to other farmers and folks that might have some questions or scratching their heads right now wondering what they did wrong?
I've been pretty open with people. I probably get 30 to 50 messages on Instagram a week about fiber. And then on email, I mean, I've had hundreds of, and this isn't just in Indiana, this is across the country, that I'm getting emails from people across the United States curious about what I'm doing. I mean, I just had an email the other day from a guy in Texas that is wanting to grow 150 acres. And that was my exact question to him is, you're in Texas, where are you going to go with it? You know? Well, the guy, you know, there is nobody in Texas currently processing. So, like I said, everybody just needs to take a breather, take a step back, watch what happens. You know, the industry is kind of the Wild West right now. You got good players, you got bad players.
Right.
Shakeout really happened a lot this year. You know, three of the biggest CBD companies in the United States and Kentucky all went bankrupt in the same week.
That is amazing.
You know, and then the fourth one being the fiber company went out of business before they even really got started in the year. So, like I said, I just ask everybody to be cautious, and it's going to take a little time to get this thing on the tracks, heading in the direction that we need to be going. But there is a lot of positive stuff that'll be coming about. So just kind of hang tight. You don't always want to be the first one to go for the ride on the roller coaster because you don't know if it's built properly. But let it go a couple times. Let your buddies go ahead of you, watch and see what happens, and then jump on after you're sure it's safe.
There we go. Words to Live by Jay Barry, founder and owner of Ignite Racing Fuel, based up in Marion, Indiana. Jay, as always, it's a great pleasure to have you on the program. Yeah. A ton of information, and that's what we always appreciate. And again, we do encourage people to get to that Midwest Hemp Council website.
Check go those out, guys out.
Yeah, see some functions, go out to some field days, things like that, and get a feel for what's going out there, and meet the people like Jay who have been out there touch the soil, touch the seeds, and been there, done that sort of thing. So, Jay, again, we do appreciate your time, and we're going to look forward to having you back on here soon.
All right. Sounds good. And everybody have a Merry Christmas, and looking forward to a fun 2020.
Absolutely. Thanks, Jay.
All right. Thanks.
All right. As we continue on, once again, we're going to speak with Justin Swanson, Midwest Hemp Council president. He's also the vice president of Bose Public Affairs Group of Council at Bose, McKinney, and Evans. Once again, Justin Swanson. Justin, how you doing today?
Great, Jason. How are you doing?
Oh, doing fantastic. And as always, great to have you back on the show. And when we have you on the program, that means there's all kinds of legislative updates, or at least there are updates that we need to know about.
Manage expectations there, Jason. Okay.
We're just trying to build you up to what you are there, Justin. And one of those would be an update on the interim final rule. I know they've extended that deadline comment period.
Yeah, so this is at the very least, a recognition from USDA that there is quite a bit of concern, not just from the industry, but from Congress as well, on basically what's out there right now in the interim final rules. So they did extend that deadline, which is, it's a good sign. It's a nice gesture. But at the end of the day, really the only thing that's that matters is what those look like. And so we need to make sure the industry continues to submit comments, as well as make sure you talk to your federal representatives, either in Senate or in the House of Representatives. Both of them would be great, but we basically need to just keep the pressure on and let them know that these interim final rules, the current version of them, are not acceptable.
And are these? Was this deadline extended because of the comments they were getting, or something they found behind the scenes?
I think it's probably a combination of both, but I will tell you, when you have the authors of the bill write a letter to the agency that's been charged with basically developing regulations and saying that they're way off, that's usually a pretty good sign that USDA has got a picture that there are issues. So it's a combination of both, but I'll tell you, I think the most effective means is having conversations and educating your own representatives, and basically ask them to write a letter to USDA that, and I think that has a big impact.
Well, we know here in Indiana that Senator Braun and Congressman Baird, they wrote a letter to the USDA. Is that the one you're referring to?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great example. Well, the one I referred to earlier were the congressmen and the senators that actually authored the hemp language or the 18 Farm Bill.
Mm-hmm.
They had a letter, but yeah, our own Indiana delegation submitted a letter to Secretary Perdue on December 16th, so just a couple days ago. And this is really, I think, a key point in Indiana's history with hemp here that I think this is the first time that our own Indiana delegation has gone on record of not only supporting the industry, but asking for the interim final rule specific changes that kind of match pretty nicely with our own infographic that we have up on our website at MidwestHempCouncil.com. Senator Braun and Congressman Baird signed on to a joint letter basically asking for four things. I don't know if you want me to run through those real quick, Jason.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So they asked, they focused on four things. The first was the negligence threshold. The second was the harvest window. The third was kind of testing protocol. And fourth was kind of matches with three and testing protocol and all. And I'll get into the distinction there in a bit. But basically on the negligence threshold right now, if a farmer grows over 0.5 or above THC level of crop, you are looking potentially you're exposed to criminal sanctions, which is devastating to the industry. It's
just ridiculous.
Laughable.
Unless they can prove you did that on purpose or you have some nefarious, reason for it. That's just ridiculous.
Well, and couple that fact, Jason, with the fact that USDA declined from establishing a federal certified seed program because the genetics are so wild right now and we don't have a consistent, stable supply of them.
Mm-hmm.
They're turning around and trying to hold farmers liable for, an industry that doesn't have the genetics where it needs to be right now.
Mm-hmm.
So what Senator Braun and Congressman Baird ask is to raise that negligence threshold to 1% THC. Which I think gives a much better safe harbor to farmers working with, essentially a new crop.
Sure.
And it also gives, it gives them the confidence to explore a little bit, or at least dip their toes into the industry here.
Yeah, because it is understandable that at some point there has to be a cap and there has to be reason to keep that cap. If you had 2% growing out there in the field, you'd have kids out there taking that, smoking that. And that, of course, is not what this what the hemp law is for. So there does have to be restrictions, obviously.
Right. And I think, again, in the letter, I think 1% THC threshold is reasonable, meaning it'll maintain the integrity of the hemp market, but also balances that with law enforcement concerns.
Now, obviously, Senator Braun, Congressman Baird, they're not farmers. So for them to have this information and to write that sort of letter, they must be working with the farmers.
Yeah, they are. I know they're actively reaching out to the industry. And actually, I think they both have farmland. So I think
I stand corrected.
They have a little exposure. But this is kind of a paradigm shift in Indiana's history with hemp, where we actually have our delegation actively working to shape the development of policy at the federal level.
Yeah, something we certainly cannot complain about as Hoosiers.
Not at all. No, it's a great thing to see.
And I did cut you off there, Justin. You had some other points.
The second one is this short 15-day harvest window. Currently, right now, Indiana farmers have what is seen to be a luxury now with a 30-day harvest window. And what I mean by that is this is the time frame when farmers have to give notice for the state to come out and do essentially their final test on the crop and whether or not they can go to harvest.
Mm-hmm.
And so 30 days is important because one, it allows for delays. Right now, I think there's one of the big bottlenecks in the industry is getting your test results back in a timely manner. And also weather, all these other unforeseen circumstances that could delay that. We just think that 15-day harvest window is too short. Senator Braun and Congressman Baird asked for a 30-day window, and they actually referenced the fact that this is a current Indiana practice, and we didn't have any issues, as far as I know, on that harvest window. So I think that's a nice sweet spot.
Mm-hmm.
The third one is asking for strictly test for Delta 9 THC as opposed to total THC. This has been a longstanding issue in the industry, and this is where you kind of people ask, well, you're a Delta 9 state or a total THC state. And just to be clear, to make sure everyone knows what we're talking about, Delta 9 THC references the cannabinoid that gives a psychoactive effect in cannabis. And total THC refers to adding THCA, which is the acid form of Delta 9, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And taking that and adding that, converting it into THC Delta 9 and adding those numbers together, basically, to give whether or not your crop is above or below the 0.3% THC threshold.
Okay.
So the legal argument is, well, the federal statute and Indiana law only references Delta 9 for measurements or compliance purposes. I think reasonable minds could differ on whether or not, you know, we're fully following state and federal law when we're actually adding in THCA into that final number.
Right.
Does that make sense?
I'll have to probably re-listen to this whole thing again just to make that make sense, Justin, but I'm sure it does.
So they basically ask, do Delta 9 only for compliance purposes or raise the total threshold to 1% total THC?
Okay.
Which, again, I think is a pretty reasonable ask.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, the fourth one is making sure that the sampling protocol requires homogenizing the entire hemp plant for a sample. So right now, and why this is important, again, for compliance purposes, is the highest concentration of cannabinoids and therefore Delta 9 THC, which ultimately what you're testing for, is found in the top cola of that plant, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And so what Indiana's doing right now is going out, at least what they did in the 19 season, was go out and they just clipped the top 2 inches of the hemp plant. And we've talked about this before. We think that's a little unreasonable, knowing the fact that there can be a 50% difference from the top and the bottom of the plant in cannabinoid concentration.
Mm-hmm.
And couple that with the fact that the farmer typically sells the entire hemp plant. We want to make sure that farmers, sure, the sample that's taken represents what the farmer's selling, essentially.
Yeah, and again, this was all four of these points were in the letter that was sent by Senator Braun and Congressman Baird.
That's right, and that letter's up on our website, Jason.
Okay, fantastic, and we certainly encourage folks to go check that out, MidwestHempCouncil.com, and read that. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Sorry, Jason, and finally, be sure, if you live in Indiana, and maybe even if you don't, be sure to reach out to Senator Braun and Congressman Baird's office and thank them for taking a leadership role on hemp policy at the federal level. Again, we have our contact links up on our website, so be sure to check it out.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, because as much criticism as there is about the government and how the government works with the farmers, these two gentlemen certainly are working with the farmers, so we want to show that support. And also, again, to check everything, make sure they know what they're talking about in our representation as well. There's also been a congressional update with language pending that may help bring a little bit of clarity to the CBD industry. Talk about that.
So this basically CBD language is trying to prod the FDA into coming up with some kind of regulatory structure for CBD products in the market. This language got tacked onto a bill that what's called like a must-pass bill. It's a funding bill. And if they don't pass it by a certain time, then, you know, the government will shut down. So there's a lot of people want to see the bill passed. So the good news is, you know, we're part of the bill that's likely going to pass. It is a little more watered down than what was originally passed earlier in the Senate version of the bill.
Mm-hmm.
That actually directed FDA to issue a policy of enforcement discretion with regard to CBD products, and basically making them do something. right now, basically what's in the current version is a $2 million grant to research the products, kind of do a deep policy dive of the current evaluation of how they're treated versus what should be, market surveillance to make sure that products in the market are are what they say they are when they're being sold to consumers. And what's really important, issue an enforcement discretion policy, and that will basically give guidelines for good actors to follow if they want to stay off the FDA's radar.
Right.
And also, again, they're asked for, you guys need to develop some clear regulatory framework. So, again, it's not perfect, but it's definitely a step in the right direction on for businesses selling CBD-infused products or on how to operate in a legal manner.
And there's a lot of places popping up selling CBD right now, some people that are certainly legitimate and doing the right thing. But again, you can walk into a gas station and buy it, and you really don't know what you're getting. So there does need to be some guidelines so people know across the board that they're getting what they're paying for.
Absolutely. And what this does is it because right now people or businesses or individuals who are cutting corners in the industry, they're able to do so because the good guys don't have a legal framework to operate under.
Right.
So it's much harder to find the bad actors when you don't have, a true regulatory framework set up.
Absolutely. Now, we discussed a lot about hemp flower over the summer, and it was legalized, but hemp flower litigation now is back in the news. Can you give us a little update on what's going on with that?
Sure. So, again, we're going to be up in the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. So that we'll be in Chicago in a couple months. And the state's the opening brief is due December 19th. So I think that's tomorrow, actually. So we'll have an idea of what position the state's taking. And the plaintiff's brief is then due on January 21st. And then the state's reply brief is due March 11th. So I know that's a lot of dates thrown at you, but I'm just trying to give everyone a roadmap on what this looks like.
And then what is the litigation? What's the purpose of it? What is it dealing with?
So they're challenging Judge Baker's ruling for the emergency injunction. So basically we're going to be making the same arguments we made previously. I don't think we'll change a whole lot. So we're looking forward to it. And just a note, I mean, something could happen during session where it makes this lawsuit moot.
Mm-hmm.
So if the General Assembly decides to, put out some regulations on the sale and possession of craft hemp flower in Indiana, it could make this whole thing moot. So session will be interesting, but either way, we'll likely be up in Chicago in the next couple months.
And right now, hemp flower is legal to sell in Indiana.
That's absolutely right.
Okay, and of course, if this if you fail with this lawsuit or this litigation, it possibly could not be available for sale.
That's right, and that's why we urge everybody in the industry to stay close to MidwestHempCouncil.com and listen for updates, as we'll be sure to give them out as soon as we have them.
All right, and as we continue on with Justin Swanson, Midwest Hemp Council President, as well as the Vice President of Bose Public Affairs Group of Council at Bose McKinney and Evans, let's get some updates on the 2020 growing season. We've got 2019 behind us. It was a long year, a very educational year. what are we looking forward with 2020?
Well, so we actually, the Indiana Hemp Advisory Committee meeting was supposed to meet on Monday of this week, and unfortunately, due to the weather, had to cancel. So that has been rescheduled for January 17th from 9 a.m. to noon at the Beck Agricultural Center in West Lafayette. And we have a flyer up on MidwestHempCouncil.com, but the address is 4550 U.S. 52 West, and that'll be in room 143.
Okay, and again, that is up on the website on the front page, so folks can check that out.
Yeah, and I mentioned that, Jason, because this has a big impact on when we actually release our regulations. And so we're anticipating on this January 17th, the seed commissioner will release the regulations, and we'll have clear guidance on what we're operating under for the 2020 growing season.
And this was delayed because of weather, but is that a positive for the industry that there's another month to look at this?
It is what it is, because we don't really have an active comment period.
Mm-hmm.
I know the seed commissioner and the state chemist are doing an awesome job of reaching out to individual stakeholders on the committee to make sure he knows kind of where their focus is in terms of policy development.
Gotcha. All right, Justin, anything else that we can add this week?
No, I feel like I did a lot of talking, so I'll let you go.
Well, that was fantastic. We got a lot of information there. Like I said, I'll have to go back and listen a couple times, like I think a lot of folks do, just to absorb it all. But that's why we're here, and that's why we give the information. So we certainly do appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Jason.
All right, Justin, and that is going to do it for our show this week. If you'd like more information about the Midwest Hemp Council, go to our website, MidwestHempCouncil.com, to find out how you can get involved and become a member. We'd like to thank our sponsor, the Bose Public Affairs Group at Bose, McKinney & Evans. We'd also like to thank you for tuning in, and remember to tell a friend about the Midwest Hemp Council Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Dozier, and we will talk to you again next week. So long, everybody.